This is Garden Talk on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Jill Nadeau. Do you have a spot in your landscape that you'd like to screen for privacy, maybe muffle some noise or protect it from weird weather, or maybe just because it would look great? Well, we'll be talking about creating an evergreen fence for all those purposes. Joining us for the first time is Mike Keppel. He's the store manager at McKay Garden Center in Oshkosh, and he'll have some suggestions for some hardy evergreens for year-round screening and how to plant them and care for them. What questions do you have about planting an evergreen fence? Do you need help with selecting a variety? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Hi, Mike. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Jill. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So what are the advantages of an evergreen privacy fence over, say, maybe like a regular wooden fence?
Well, wildlife habitat would be probably top of the list distinction there. A lot of people think it might be cheaper to do a hard fence, but, you know, a living fence can bring a lot of other additional benefits besides just the privacy screen.
Absolutely. And you probably won't have to replace it as fast.
Usually a lot less upkeep.
Yeah. Once it's established, it's good to go for a while. So,
exactly.
Yeah. So what questions should you ask before, you know, you make that selection of that tree? Because like we said, it's going to be there for a long time, hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, you obviously want to take note of your space. How much space do you actually have for the plant to grow, knowing that it's going to get bigger than when you buy it?
Mm-hmm.
How much sunlight is there? Is the sunlight going to be the same for the next 10 years? Or did you plant a new shade tree in that area and it's going to change as that shade tree grows? Kind of planning for the future, things change. Note your soil type, your soil moisture, little things like your grade. Is this an area like a swale where water drains to? Is this on a hillside where water drains away from it? Those little nuances are going to help you pick the right plant to be most successful over the long term.
And those are lots of questions that you can go to a nursery like yours, like McKay, that the people there can really help you out with, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You know, bring pictures. That helps really communicate to staff when we're trying to help determine what's the best plant. Getting some innate knowledge, seeing we've never been to your yard. Mm-hmm. So bringing those pictures of your yard to us really helps us kind of fill in a lot of the blanks without asking a million questions.
Right. So Lisa emailed us and she just moved to Stevens Point where it's very sandy and her new yard is just grass and lots of weeds. She's wondering if you have any idea for a type of evergreen fence or maybe some other bush that would make the border between her yard and her neighbors easy to mow up against. She doesn't want to inconvenience them by putting in something that will cause more work on their side. Well, that's very nice, Lisa. Do you have some suggestions for her?
For sandier soils, you usually think of firs. McKay has a concolor fir that would be more adapted to those sandy soils. The nice thing about a sandy soil is plants generally are going to be okay, even if they were a wet-loving plant in a sandier soil, as long as it does get moisture, right? If it gets high and dry and really drought-stressed in the summertime, you're probably going to have to go out and give it some extra love. But that's where, you know, a Norway spruce or a Black Hills spruce, or like I said, the concolor fir would probably be pretty good plants in those areas, as long as she has the space for it. Those are relatively larger evergreens.
Right, because that's a huge point. How much space do you have? Where you plant them, too, is how wide are those going to get? And, I mean, the former owner of my house planted some, I don't even know, they're probably red cedar right on the lot line. So they are encroaching on my neighbors probably by 8 to 10 feet into their yard. Luckily, they don't really care too much at this point. But, they are way over there. So you got to think about that, too, right?
Yeah, that is something that unfortunately, when you talk to a lot of customers, you'll be like, that might be too big of a tree for that spot. And they're looking at it when it's a lot smaller and they're not thinking of the downline consequences of it being larger. And unfortunately, a common response can be not my problem. But, you know, if you want to be that considerate neighbor and do the right thing by them, yeah, you really do want to plan to have a space that can accommodate the mature size of the tree, not the size that it is when you buy it.
Right, right. I think probably the top of the list for most people is like, how fast can I get it to grow? How quickly can it actually become that fence? What would you suggest for the fastest growing?
So probably the fastest growing would probably be a toss up between your white pines, your Norway spruces, or green giant arborvita. All of those grow at an alarmingly quick rate once they're established in the landscape. You're talking 3 to 4 feet on some years, given good growing conditions. You can always give, you know, your evergreens some fertilizers and things like that, usually in the springtime, just before their June flush, to help encourage new growth and maintain their fullness. But you can only push them so far with fertilizer.
And how long does it take to get established? Now, you can buy these evergreens in, you know, smaller, like 1 gallon pots. They get big. So the smaller ones, it's going to take them longer to establish, or do they start growing just faster than the larger ones do?
Generally speaking, I would say your container plants are going to establish a little bit quicker versus like a larger plant on day one that's maybe bald and burlapped. Mm-hmm. And the real difference between those two is a bald and burlapped plant was growing happily out in a field, and then we come and we harvest it and we dig it out and we put it in this cage. And so that's a little bit more stressful of an experience from the plant's point of view than being constrained to the pot that you were in. And so with bald and burlap materials, we'll usually use the saying sleep, creep, leap. It's kind of like a 3-year recovery process where that first year they're going to relatively moderate growth. They're kind of sleeping. It's not that they're not growing. It's just they're recovering that root system that they lost in the process of being harvested. Year two, they're going to start creeping along. You're going to start seeing some more top growth, but they're still not going to be growing as fast as they normally would. And then year three, if everything's gone right in the first 2 years, they should be fully well established and resuming a normal growth rate at that point.
Okay. Great things to keep in mind so that you don't get impatient.
Yes.
Sarah in New Auburn has a question. Go right ahead, Sarah.
Hi. We were lucky enough to get a property that is on a lake and has a two-lane highway on the other side of our property. 20 years later, the forest that we planted isn't doing a very good job of being a sound barrier, and the highway has gotten progressively busier. We're looking for how to increase sound dissipation between our house, the road, and the lake. Can you help?
Okay, Mike, what do you think?
Well, it kind of depends on what you already had planted there, but layering, you know, different evergreens in that border area between those not noisy areas and your property, using things that are going to stay relatively dense, like the arborvitas. If you have a row of those, they can be planted so close together, or some of the larger varieties like Techni that take up a good amount of space from top to bottom, they're going to provide a good wall that's going to kind of deflect sound up and over them. That's where, you know, your white pines, your Norway spruces, they may be, look denser when they're younger, but when they get to be mature, they tend to have a more leggy, stretched appearance because of that fast growth rate. And so they're not going to probably deflect as much sound as something denser like a Black Hills spruce or the arborvitas.
Okay. And we will have a link on our website if you go to WPR.org/gardentalk to an article that is on McKay's website. So there'll be a list of all of these. So don't think you have to like write down everything that Mike is saying, but you can if you really want to. So you'll have you'll be able to take a look at that article with a lot of these trees and listed. And so you can check that out, which which has got a lot of really good information. So you can go there to Sarah. We are talking with Mike Keppel. He is the STIR manager at McKay Garden Center in Oshkosh. And we did get another email from Nancy in La Crosse, Mike. She would like to create a privacy screen using evergreens. It is a northwest border that's part sun, part shade in the bluffs. She would like to use eastern red cedar, which is her first choice, or another juniper variety. But they have herds of deer, which is something that's you need to address. What are your thoughts?
Well, she's got a very good first choice there. Eastern red cedar would probably be my top suggestion, just based on her location and the little bit of shade that she gets. Does fairly well for deer resistance as well. There are other junipers out there like Star Power, much spinier texture and kind of has a nice blue color to it as well. So that one is really well good for deer resistance and browsing. It may not love being in excessive shade though. Long term, it may get a little thinner or open on the more shaded side as a consequence of that, whereas the eastern red cedar would probably retain more fullness because it's a little more adaptable to those lower light environments.
And does it make sense to look around where you live to find trees that naturally grow in that area?
Definitely, yeah. If she finds other wild, you know, white pine or Norway spruces, white spruce growing naturally in that environment, you've got a good key from the landscape that, hey, this plant is going to do successful here because it's naturally doing successful here.
Yeah. Now, what about like the cold, cold areas of the state? What are some of the trees that would do really, really well there?
So one of the cold hardiest and tolerant of kind of exposed areas is going to be like your Norway spruce. It's a large tree, very adaptable zone wise all the way down to zone two. And it gets to be a large tree, so it can really take up a lot of space. You just want to make sure you're planning for that. That's the one tree that a lot of people, when they're coming into the garden centers, they see this beautiful small Christmas tree thing and that they don't plan for the ultimate size that it will get in the landscape.
Yes, I think we've all had that problem before. It looks so cute when we planted it, and then it just gets huge. We were talking, I mean, when we talked to the last caller, she'd mentioned that she's near a road, highway. In a lot of cases, we are near areas that are just kind of tough, and a roadway is one of those spots. You know, it's either get like lots of full sun or maybe with the road you're getting salt and, you know, who knows what else. But are there some trees that are just tougher than others and would be good for those spots?
Yeah, like the Norway spruce is probably one of the toughest. Eastern red cedar is very adaptable and drought tolerant as well. Salt spray is definitely a concern when you get really close to any type of roadway. You don't really think about how far snow plows actually push snow when they're clearing the roads. They go by, it could be pretty fast speeds. And if it's a slushy snow, it can spray 15, 20 feet further than the roadway, which it doesn't seem like it. You don't see the actual snow piling up 15, 20 feet away. But as they're going through, that salty water is splashing up into the air and the wind is traveling over. And so I've definitely seen some issues, particularly with arborvitaes, when they get planted too close to a roadway.
I think we've all seen those lovely rusty colors on the arborvitaes along the highways, for sure. Now, what about shade areas? You had mentioned the shop hicks use earlier. Are there any other plants that do well in shade, or is that pretty much it?
So yews are a really good category of plant for shaded areas. They come in a couple different types. You've got some lower growing, more smaller, 4 foot wide to 6 foot wide by 3 to 4 foot tall. And then there are like capitata yews, which will be a little bit more pyramid in form. They'll get a little bit taller in that 6 to 8 foot, 4 to 5 foot wide. Or you'd have the really kind of narrow and upright Hicks yew, which is going to be similar. That's 6 to 8 feet tall, but then only like about 3 feet wide.
Okay.
So those are all really good for shade. The one issue with them is going to be that deer problem. Deer absolutely love yews. Uh-huh. So when you're talking about shade and deer combined together, there aren't a lot of great, great options. Eastern hemlock is a pretty adaptable and tolerant of some deer browsing. It's not bulletproof. And really, you know, no evergreen is deer proof, even if it's labeled that way. The deer don't know it doesn't taste good until they try it. And if you're a starving deer, you're going to eat whatever you can.
Right.
And so, you know, how many deer are in your yard? What's the actual pressure? You know, if there's a herd of deer that come through your yard, they're probably going to browse outside of their natural preferred hosts because, well, if I don't eat it, the guy standing next to me will.
Right.
So you know, those little things are going to make a difference as to how successful those plants mm-hmm. hold up.
Yeah. Cassandra emailed us. She said, evergreens don't have tap roots, so soil surface roots can be trip hazards. Plus, they interfere with lawnmowers, and these can be problematic for next door neighbors. So just as an FYI. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Cassandra. Yeah. That's a really good point. So let's talk a little bit about once we decide what kind of evergreen that we're going to get, spacing. So what do we need to know about putting those, you know, where we're going to plant them?
Right. Well, you really want to plan for the mature size of the plant. So roughly if something's going to get 20 feet across, you would want to plant them 20 feet apart mm-hmm. so that when they're mature, they're just barely touching.
Yeah.
A lot of times people will compromise and they will plant them closer together because they want them to grow together faster. The other way to kind of get a denser screen without planting the plants too close together would be to do like a staggered row situation. Instead of planting everything in one straight line, you have two rows staggered apart so that you're able to maintain adequate distance between the two plants that would have been next to each other, but still preserving a dense screen from your yard.
Mm-hmm.
And typically a staggered row can provide more screening from more sight lines as you move about a yard. So that's something you may want to consider depending upon how dense of a screen you're ultimately requiring.
And visually that can actually look a little bit more interesting, can it?
It can. You can use different types of evergreens, do something in the back row, something else in the front row. There's a lot of more flexibility as to what the final product is going to look like when you do a staggered row, but you are going to be using up a little bit more of your yard space.
Yes. When it comes to figuring out then for the spacing, what's the math on that?
So typically if you're like planting just a straight line, say it's 100 feet long and you have an arborvita that's going to get 6 feet wide, you would just take your 100 feet divided by six and, you know, you're looking at 16 and some change and, mm-hmm. well, you know, you can, okay, the 16 will fit or I'm going to get 17 and have a little bit of extra coverage. But that's generally speaking how you kind of figure out roughly how you would want to, how many plants in a run.
Mm-hmm. And then if you're going to do staggered, then you need to figure out, so they'd be in between the planting and then as far as how far they are from each other, it's the same as the width that they would be, right?
Yeah, there's a little bit more math when you do that because it's on a staggered row, you gotta figure out what the distance is between the plants, which is based on how much space you're putting between the two staggered rows as well. So there's a little bit more math involved when you do the staggered row. And you generally will end up using more plants when you do a staggered row.
Okay, all right. And when's the best time to put those in?
So spring through early fall would be my preferred time for anybody planting evergreens. You can technically plant a plant all the way up until freeze out in the fall. The one thing I just caution people with planting evergreens really late in the season is evergreens are basically their own water storage tank. And so all the water that they need to live for the entire winter while the ground is frozen needs to be in the plant itself before the ground freezes. And so when you plant things too late in the season, they haven't had a whole lot of time to make a bigger water tank. They haven't had time to expand that root system and be able to store more water all winter. And so you plant them earlier in the year, that gives them a little bit longer of a runway up to fall and winter time to build a bigger root system to store more water so that they don't run into some drought stress issues late in winter. Typically, everything looks fine all winter. You go through the worst of the temperatures, the worst of the snow. You get to March and you get some warm weather and you start getting excited for spring. And then you notice your evergreens are turning brown. And it's because the sun's gotten stronger intensity. We've got longer day length, but the ground's still frozen. And so there's no liquid water for the plant to replenish that the water that it's been losing all winter. And so you'll start to see those drought stress issues that really started in fall show up in that early springtime.
Mm-hmm. And there's not much you can do at that point, is there?
At that point, there's little you can do. Obviously, you can fertilize to encourage new growth and help recover the foliage in that next growing season. But once it's brown, yes, it doesn't just magically turn back green.
I always keep it on there for a while, just hoping some miracle will occur.
I do too. I mean, it's one of those things, you know, the plant can at least extract resources out of those dying tissues. There may be no water in the fronds or the leaves themselves, but there are some stored carbohydrates and things like that in the branches. And so they'll reallocate those resources and you will get new adventitious shoots that'll form along some of the smaller branches. And so depending upon what the plant is, yeah, don't go out there with a pruner just to get the brown out of the way right away. Give the plant some time to show where it's going to recover from and then make your pruning decisions.
Well, good, because then I don't feel so bad and negligent as a gardener. So excellent. It looks like we just... that's actually going to be a little bit longer than we can probably go for. We're almost out of time. Tell us a little bit about the McKay Nursery in Oshkosh, the garden center there.
Sure. So we are right off of Highway 41, mm-hmm. Intersection with Highway 76 on the north side of Oshkosh. This is about their fifth year with the garden center here in Oshkosh. Been doing a lot of improvements on the property and expanding our selection over those years. We've got a nice greenhouse on the property that we're able to grow our own annuals in the springtime as well. And McKay Nursery is, you know, our mothership down in Waterloo, and that's where all the fresh plants are produced and grown on their 2,000 acres. And so we get fresh stock in throughout the season. I know a lot of people think, oh, everything's just here in spring and then it kind of goes bare. That's not really the case with us. We have a great resource in that nursery down in Waterloo, and we're able to keep a full yard with fresh plant stock throughout the entire season.
And it's really important when you're buying things like that it is grown close to where you're buying it so that you know that it's acclimated to our weather.
Yes, that is a great talking point. Green Giant Arborvita would be the one that I would specifically highlight. It is gaining popularity and it's grown around the Midwest and East Coast, West Coast. But if you buy a West Coast or East Coast grown plant, you are much more likely to have that winter injury in that first year, because even though that plant is tolerant of our weather, it's never been through our weather. Mm-hmm. I use the analogy, if you grew up in Florida, you can live in Wisconsin, you're just probably not going to like that first winter.
Or two.
Exactly.
Exactly. Well, Mike, I thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciate it and would love to have you back and share your expertise with us.
No problem. Thank you for having us.
You bet. Mike Keppel is the store manager at McKay Garden Center in Oshkosh, and we really appreciate him sharing his time with us. Coming up, we're going to be talking about chaos gardening. You probably have never heard of it. I just heard about it not too long ago, and I thought, we need to talk about this. This is so interesting. So Sally McCabe is going to be with us. She's an associate director of community education with the Pennsylvania Horticulture Society. We'll have her with us next, so stay with us.